Greetings, Princeps, and welcome to the 45th episode of the God Engine Cast, a podcast dedicated to discussing the Adeptus Titanicus wargame produced by Games Workshop. In this week's show, we are going to be discussing how exactly you would paint the Warmaster with a bunch of my friends from around Oklahoma and Dave. Okay, before we get into this week's main section of the show, I just want to take a few minutes to talk about a few things that have been on my mind. First of all, this week's show is not going to have any other segments in it. We're going to get straight stuck into the main section here in a minute, and that will take us to the end of the show. I'm not going to include a Legio in Brief this week, because I've got some ideas about what I want to do with that section, but I wanted to focus purely on the content of Painting Warmaster. But before we get there, there is one other thing that's been sitting there. It's been a year now since I started this podcast, and when I started this podcast, the intent for me was this was going to be a way for me to start a community feedback system. That we were going to spend a lot of time on the show talking about upcoming events, recent events, talking to event organizers about what they did well, talking to event organizers about what didn't go well, so that people could hear these stories and understand how to improve their local events, how to build a better Titanicus community, so that we could slowly build a strong and vibrant community world over, so no matter where I travel, I can play great games of Titanicus. And obviously, that hasn't happened. Not many people have played many games of Titanicus at all since I started this podcast, and it's been kind of weird. We've all been frozen, building our forces and not really playing. There have been some great people out there who've been building communities in an ad hoc way, online, doing painting and hangouts and doing stuff like that, but we haven't been rolling many dice. That is going to change soon. And as it changes, as out there you start putting together events, message me through Facebook, through Instagram, through my email address, which is god.engine.cast@gmail.com, and I will gladly talk to you about your event. I will let you come on this show and talk about your event, or you can just send me some notes that I can read out for you, or even we can have a conversation and I can come up with some spiel for your event. We don't even need to be plugging it as an event for other people to go to. I just think people would like to hear about events as they start back up. People would like to hear about what was successful in organizing an event, what's successful in organizing a local community. If you end up having a successful community which has, you know, 5 or 6 dedicated players who show up every week to play Titanicus, there's many people who want to know what you did, even if it seemed utterly simple to you. It's a question I get bombarded with, and it's probably like the most frequently asked question in my mailbox when I ask people to send me questions is, how do you build a community? And in all honesty, I'm like, I don't know. I've been experienced good communities, but I'm not really built a successful one myself. And this leaves me asking everyone out there. It's happening. I know it's happening. And if you happen to be involved in doing it, please loop me in. Let me be involved in this conversation, and then you can help other people develop, you know, a community, and a global community, and we can all get a better game out of it. Okay. And with all that said, I just have my final normal plugs. I would love it if everyone could go pause the podcast and go and rate and review this podcast on their podcasting app of choice. It helps others find the show, and that will help build the community that I've just been talking about. So please help out. Secondly, if you are so inclined, I have a Ko-fi account and a Patreon. I'll be more than happy to welcome any donations, regular, singular, whatever. I am starting to put money together so I can get the upgrades I need to take the show to YouTube and to get stuck into some additional content. So any help there is incredible. The help I've been given so far from my Patreon and through Ko-fi has overwhelmed me over the course of the year. I never thought I'd actually do either of those things, let alone get the response I've had from them. So everyone who's contributed, you have my thanks. Let's just get stuck into the rest of the show and a detailed conversation about the Warmaster once again. So, welcome to the Titanforge for one last time. In this week's show, I'm going to sit down with a bunch of my friends from around Oklahoma to talk about how I plan to paint the Warmaster Titan when it is released. In the middle of January, when Games Workshop unveiled the Warmaster, I was bowled over by it. It was incredible. But there was something about the paint job and the actual model that had me questioning things. I wasn't happy with the model completely, and I certainly was not happy with the paint job they presented on the previews. It had problems, and it had really big problems, and some problems that I couldn't put my finger on. And I got in several conversations with folk, and I had some really good ideas that were suggested to me. And I realised pretty quickly on after a couple of these conversations, this would be a solid idea for a show. I just started planning out these Titanforge episodes at that point, and decided to reach out to a bunch of my friends who were experienced painters, and see if we could get them on the show. And we did. So, this is that conversation. But before we get there, I'm going to introduce all of the people involved and talk about a little of the pre-planning we had for this episode. So it started with me posting to Facebook and just asking if there was anyone out there who did a lot of painting who wanted to come on to talk about the Warmaster. And I had like 5 people all suggest they wanted to be involved, 4 of which all were local to me and were in a similar time zone where I could get them all round to a round table, which is what we're about to do. So I had them all join a Facebook chat, and we talked about this idea of how would we paint the Warmaster Titan, and we had instantly some really good ideas flowing over the chat. We picked a day to do the episode, and one of the painters had to drop out. I'll talk about that in a second. We sat down, we recorded it. Sadly, that day fell on the 8th day of my coronavirus episode, which was not great. I didn't want to cancel the recording because it was a day I knew all these guys could make and they'd all made the time to do it. And I was feeling pretty good that day. So we still sat down and recorded the episode. But on listening to it, listening to what I had to say, I was not at my best. So please bear with me. I edited my bits as best as I could. And to be honest, in this week's show, we're doing it as a round table, I was able just to shut up and let the others take the lead, which was really refreshing. But it does mean that the show has a weird flow to it, but I still felt it was a really enjoyable conversation. Right, so let me introduce everyone who's involved in this upcoming conversation. So first up, we have Mike O'Brien. He's a commission painter operating the Beard and Brush Studio here in Oklahoma. I've known Mike since I moved to Oklahoma, meeting him for the first time when he was working at the OKC Games Workshop store. Since then, me and Mike have been involved in numerous clubs and even a competitive team or two. In fact, me and him set up a few ourselves. Great guy. And he's long been someone that I've turned to whenever I needed painting advice. He's always been there, helped me through it, welcomed me into his home numerous times when I show up with a model going, I don't know how to paint this, Mike. And he's helped me come up with a plan. Next up is David Komen. David is someone I was introduced to via Mike. Mike was getting a lot of advice from David, which was, you know, completes the circle, I suppose. Dave is very well known within the 30K community as being the main organizer for the Taking of Pyrex narrative events in America. He was set to run the Adepticon Horus Heresy event last year. Obviously, that never came to pass. And he was key in me getting the Titanicus event ran at the Iron Halo last year. Now, he is also a commission painter. He operates under the Invested Painting Studio and has links on Facebook and Twitch and all sorts of places. I've got them all in the show notes. Great guy, and once again, his insight has been invaluable in this whole process. Finally, joining us today, we have Andy Cole. Andy was the winner of the painting award from last year's Iron Halo. He's an all-round great chap, and as best as I'm aware, he has painted the most Titanicus models, or at least Titanicus battle groups, out of anyone in Oklahoma. And he does do a bit of commission painting, though he doesn't have a sort of studio side. His contacts are all through his Facebook account. As I've said, there was a fourth person involved in the whole planning of this episode, and he wasn't able to join us because we weren't able to get the schedules work. So on that note, I really want to thank Robert Henderson. Robert has been a painting champion for many, is a really great artist, not just on miniatures, but in other mediums as well. And he didn't just leave when we realized we can get schedules to work. He created this wonderful PDF of listing all his thoughts and inputs into what he would say if he could join the show about the War Master. And I had that open on my desktop as we were talking through the conversation. I know a few others did. So his thoughts, his insights permeate this episode. So, thanks. Although it's ephemeral and I can't point to anything we said and said that was Robert. Yeah, there's his credit. He's part of the team, and thank him as much as anyone else for this episode. So with all that said, let's just get on with the roundtable. Okay, well, thank you all for joining me today. We're going to sit down and discuss painting and project planning, particularly with a focus on working with the upcoming War Master Titan. Before we get too deep in, I'm going to just go around the room so everyone can associate a name with a face. So we've got, let's say hello, David.
Hey, how we doing?
We've got Andy.
Hello.
And then finally, Mike.
Howdy.
Okay. Bunch of great guys, all from, I'd say all around Oklahoma, but David's not, despite definitely being a pillar of the Oklahoma community, weirdly.
Yeah, I went from Kansas. Now I'm down in Texas. So nothing wrong with you guys in Oklahoma, but just not going to live there.
That's fair. I don't want to live here either.
His words, not mine.
Let's start with the basics. When you're painting a model for Titanicus or a similarly scaled model, what's your favorite technique? Starting with like something that will work on an 8mm that doesn't really work on a 28mm thereabouts.
Well, I mean, for me, pretty much everything I do on 28mm, I can do on the 8mm. I mean, the Titanicus army that I painted, I did airbrush on just about all of it. And then I went in and did all the trim and details and freehanded stuff on them.
Yeah, I tend to agree that just about everything you can do on a large scale, you can apply to a small scale. I'm absolutely all about the weathering side of things. So really, probably the only thing that gets tough on the real small scale, I would say maybe like on the Titanicus size knights, or maybe probably just really on the knights, but because you could do it on the warhounds if you tried it, would be either manual weathering or salt weathering. And that's just because you're working with such small panels, you're going to have to be very, very particular about how you go in there and chip that paint off. And again, you could still do it with manual weathering if you're using like hairspray or a water soluble chippable medium, but using salt is just, even a grain of salt at that side, at that scale, is going to be taking up a lot of surface area.
Yeah, no, I tried using some of the technical paint, that type of corrosion, and it's really difficult to use on Titanicus scale models because the grit in it just looks like small boulders on the armor plates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see that.
I will say something I noticed when I was doing the armies I did was that the wash, like I use wash to line a lot of my paneling. I don't know what you guys do. The wash itself, I felt like I had to be more careful with, because too much wash in those corners really builds up fast. And like,
yeah, I agree. I had to thin my washes quite a bit to get the look I wanted with the Titanicus models.
Like I didn't have to thin it out, thankfully, because I was just going back in there just trimming all that stuff up just from multiple layers. But like it is added up real fast.
I think that's one also where like oil washes kind of, you know, would give you a little more control versus the standard acrylic wash. But again, that's just difference in how they function. One gives you a fair bit more control, but ease of use. That's also what it comes down to.
Have you had any experience playing around with oil washes, any of you guys?
Yeah, I use them a fair bit.
Yeah, David uses them a bunch. I've only used them a little bit here and there.
I actually made one and then out of like an oil ink set. It was, and I didn't use it on Titanicus. I used it on a different game, but it was really neat to watch it dry, honestly, just the way it dried.
I'm giving some thought to trying to get a good oil wash to do when I get the War Master, because I think it may be really nice to do the actual body of the War Master with, to contrast the sort of steel shell, get a nice dark oil wash.
One thing that, when we get into like the meat and potatoes of it, my painting style recently has really started to transition to more heavily rely on the application of oil washes, enamel washes, and effectively the overlay effects, where that way you don't have to do as many underlayment coats. You're not, you know, instead of trying to get, you know, four or five colors to get your base layer and get your, you know, all the transitions you need to get that perfect, you know, base coat layer, and then applying all the effects afterwards, you're basically coming in and applying that one solid layer. That's what your base color is. And then you're using the oils, you're using the enamels, these overlay colors to effectively distress that color. And then it creates that depth, creates those transitions and stains that you need. And again, oils are very, very excellent things to use for that. They give you a lot of control because if you apply them and you don't like it, you can basically wipe it away. But if you apply it, you can thin it down, you can feather it, you can fade it. There's a lot of advantages, but it is intimidating for a lot of people because it's a brand new medium. And if you're interested in trying it out, the best way to do it is to just pick up a tube and of, you know, any kind of black or any kind of dark brown and just start out making a wash and just trying a few different, you know, consistencies, find one that works for you, and then going in and just trying a pin wash.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of pin washes. If I remember, I'll throw a link to a really good pin wash YouTube video into the show notes. There's a great YouTube channel I've been watching, Race for Terror, that does a lot of really good stuff with pin washes. I'm not sure if any of you guys have discovered that channel yet. So before we sort of move on to the actual talking about the Warmaster, what are your guys' thoughts about dry brushing? Are you pro it? Are you coming around to it? Soft brush, hard brush?
I mean, it's just specific on the project you're working on. It just depends. I mean, I would say that probably about 60 to 70% of the models I do have some sort of dry brushing on them. Just if you're wanting something to have a more weathered effect or something like that, especially terrain, I dry brush the hell out of terrain.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that the only good brush is a dry brush or an airbrush. Like I mean, every night that I have ever been commissioned to paint, like the Titans that I've done, 100%, I dry brush all the damn time. And I've only gotten better at it over time. I don't think there's anything that I've seen done with a dry brush that it, once you figure out how to do it and you know what you're doing, you can do with a dry brush the same thing you can do with a wet blend. Yeah, it may not be as fantastic, and clearly use the best tools, use the best technique for what you're trying to do, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say that black dry brushed with a dark steel does not look awesome just by default as a, oh, this is a basic thing, but it's an undercoat. You do it on a chassis and then you start throwing on your other colors. Here's a bright, you know, bright aluminum for a piston. Here's a bronze for, you know, this little add-on bit. Here's some other things we're going to add on, and then just start throwing on washes. Nobody's going to notice that it's dry brush because it just looks like beat up old steel.
I see that taking more effect though on like an actual like 40K size model. Like a 40K knight would show that better than like an 18 knight. And that's just because I think it's just the size of the model and the effect might get lost the smaller you go.
Very true.
I'm just staring at this Warmaster Titan and I'm just trying to think of ways to paint it.
I'm actually just staring at it wondering, like, you ever look at these models they paint and then just wish you could crawl into the head of the people who painted them and just want to ask them, like, why did you think that? Like, what was your rationale?
I'm more curious like how this thing actually comes together and where the weapon options are going to be able to be magnetized at. And I'm just thinking like the armpit guns, for lack of a better word, like where the missile launchers are, like those are probably gonna be pretty straightforward. Probably something like a magnet just sinks in behind it and you're good to go. But the arms, I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I could definitely see that being like a faceplate on those missiles.
I wonder if that missile launcher up top magnetizes.
I love how it's a revolver. I love how they come out with the Warbringer and it's like, hey, here's a six shooter. And then they're like, here's the War Master. And it's got like a revolver missile rack. So is anybody else planning on converting the actual model, like switching panels and things out on this sucker?
Yeah, just because I don't want the eyes of I don't want the War Master eyes on the shoulder myself. I like some nice College of Titanica symbol. I'm hoping there's panels like that.
I suspect there will be. There is on every other kit.
So specifically what I'm talking about is for lack of a better way to talk about it, like the chest loincloth that they have going on here.
Yeah, I do something different with that. I'm not a fan.
So this is what I'm picturing. Just pop that sucker off. Take one of the spare shoulders from the Warlord kit, the part that goes in the middle. Slap that on the belly and then actually put this on like it's a loincloth. And I think you immediately take this model from like a 7 to a 9.
Yeah, looking at the pictures, almost like a solid inch between that loincloth bit and the actual waist. Because, I mean, realistically, that thing would be like flapping all over the place, right? Like even the weight itself would not be able to prevent that thing from shifting back and forth in my mind as this thing walks.
The bigger problem with me, I don't like the sort of what's been referred to as the earrings, those two little pendants on the side. It move more once it starts moving, so it just become.
I hadn't thought of it until that, until you just now. That's E.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah,
I reserved a right to freehand blazing stars in those things now.
Actually, I already know what's going to fix that. Just replace those instead of those stupid shields and just give it like an actual green stuff length of free-flowing banner and just cut it, but like just make it super long, cut some holes and tears in it, make it a little burnt up, and then you got yourself something awesome. Because then you could actually, I'm assuming this thing's going to have the ability to have some posability, or even if it doesn't, folks are going to convert it. That'd be a very easy and simple way to actually give it the illusion of some motion with how those things are moving.
Oh, yeah.
This thing's going to be on the same base as a Warlord, right? It's not going to be a Reaver base?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Warlord base. I mean, it's the whole of the Warlord base. I mean, it's going to be really hard to post on there. I mean, the way it sits on that base on that picture, it's got very little room to reposition. But, I mean, my big hope is that those missile launchers on the arms are not the only option it comes with in the box, because you can mechanically put quite a lot of other weapon options there, and I think the turbo lasers or something will look real, real nice.
I'm with you. I hope those arm I'm going to call them the armpit guns, because that's kind of the location they're at in my mind. I hope they have all the weapon options for those in there, at least. I mean, even if I figure they're probably going to give us the plasma cannons, right, for the arms. And they're not really talking about anything else for that. Is the Revelator or Revelator? I imagine those are probably set in stone. But I hope they give us all the extra fiddly bits for those armpits.
They'll make or break the kit for me. I mean, I'll be able to get away with it because most of the other options are stuff I've got spares, obviously, in my bits box. But it'd be nice to see.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, with the size of this, even though it's Titanicus scale, there's going to be a lot of things that people can do to make the model like physically look really cool before they even get to the painting part, you know? For me, really, the only things I don't like a whole lot, I don't like the earrings, thank you, Martin, and that chest piece loincloth, like, you drop that an inch and put an actual piece of armor where the chest should be, and I'm pretty happy with the model at that point. I mean,
yeah. May want to drop one of the panels on the loincloth if you drop it between the legs a bit more.
Yeah, maybe just go with 4 or 3, because you know that's not going to be a solid piece of plastic.
I hope not.
Well, for me, it would be perfect, because like when I did all the Titanicus stuff, I pretty much just built the models, and I primed them black, and then I airbrushed every single thing, and then I just went back in and touched up stuff and painted trim and then did washes and everything, and they were done. The only one I even left the panels off of was the Warlord.
Oh, wow. Okay.
See, I did it the most insane way I could. I built the entire model, panels and all. Like, I magnetized them, right? Because I did magnetize the Warlords. I magnetized the Reavers and the Hounds. And I, looking back on it, I did magnetize the Warbringer's arms, but I didn't magnetize its giant carapace gun. But I put all the panels on because I didn't even use an airbrush. I just hand brushed the entire lot of it.
I mean, they look good, but
yeah. Well, the hand brushing part, that's what took me the longest. I think I had everything from the original release, the Warlord down. I probably had every single bit of paint done in a week. And then it took me the next 3 weeks to do all the trim and everything. But I only work, I don't know, 15 hours a week on painting. So,
well, let's see. The Warlord I've just finished, because I finished it this morning. Doing the first coat of paint and trim took me 4 days of 6-hour sessions.
There you go.
And then once I got that all done, I got the rest of it done in another 6-hour session.
Yeah. Yeah, the trim is what takes a long time on these models, because it's so small and so tiny and so fidgety. And if you go and, you know, if you have a slip anywhere, you got to go back and clean up your plates again.
Not to mention, if you do something like they did in this Warbringer's, or not Warbringer, the Warlord's leg right there, where they did that hazard striping, or I say hazard striping because even though it's blue and red, but like if you mess that up at all, even with trim, even when doing the trim, oh my god, that is a nightmare.
Yeah, it's a nightmare to fix it.
Yeah, I mean that's what I did striping on mine, and that took a good day of the painting. I mean, it's easily done with modeling tape, but
yeah. Well, that's how I do it. I tape it off. I've got all the way from 1 millimeter to 5 millimeter tape. So I spray it black. I highlight it gray. That I.
The only thing I regret about the I did an entire army of Murder Lords last year, Legio and Interfector, and which their paint scheme post or during Heresy was black with red trim, and they had some like white flames up and down the body. I base coated all the black panels, trimmed everything in the red, washed that whole thing, and I painted all the black. And then I went back and fixed up the red as I went, or as I messed it up. And then the last step I did was I actually painted on those white flames. And the hounds weren't bad because of those like big open shin guards they have. The one that threw me for a loop, if I remember right, was the Warbringer, just because of all the panels around its legs. The Warlord was fun though.
Yeah, the Warlord's a great kit. It's actually really fun to paint because I think it's slightly better than the Imperial Knight in a way, to just get the space it plays with without it being too big.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Warlord. I was actually, it's got those big armor panels that are blank, and I was able to go in and do a lot of cool freehand work on the ones I did.
Okay, so I think the big question obviously we're looking at the image that they put up on the Warhammer community site. What would you have, well, you guys in this conversation do to save its paint scheme, because I think its paint job's actually really poor, even for the heavy metal guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll tell you guys the same thing I said in the chat when we were first discussing this. People that gray, they come that way, don't paint them that way. You know, so I would never have painted it gray to start with. It's such a boring, like this paint scheme with all that gray, even though they splash in the red, it's just boring to look at. You know, almost any of the other Titan Legions would have made this model look better just off the bat.
Yeah, and see, I'm coming from this. My Legion for Titanicus is Legio Griffonicus, which is like a gray paint scheme with yellow panels highlighting with a gold trim, right? And it's a much brighter gold than this kind of bronzy trim they did. And I think the gray I normally do, even with Citadel gray colors, if I had just swapped out all these colors, like even the whites and the reds for the yellows, and swapped all the grays straight for grays, I think it would look good. And that's honestly what I'm probably going to do.
Yeah, that would probably look good too. The yellows would just draw you right to it. The yellow is such a great looking color on models.
Especially on Titans. Like, I normally don't like painting yellow just because of how many layers I have to put down sometimes to get that really nice deep color. But like with Titans, I don't feel that because it goes by so quickly for me.
For me, it's a hard question to answer because, honest to God, I don't think that the paint job is poorly done. I think it's an issue of composition, and I don't think that the painter, let me rephrase that. I do not think that they took full advantage of the model to showcase it, and they went with a popular Legio, which is what they tend to do. Because I think most of the models they showcase, if it's not Griffonicus, it's Mortis, right? It seems like. Since this is the War Master Titan, of course they're going to showcase it as Mortis, because Mortis was the big bad guys that sided with the traitors. So it does make the most sense. But for me, when you look at this, the first thing that you see is all that gray, but even more so than that is everything is edged in this trim. It is everywhere, more than any other Titan that you've got, because this thing is to the nines with how highfalutin, regal, royal, all this extra stuff on it. My first suggestion is, if they give you panels that are blank, use them. If they don't, if you're decent with a blade, scrub off as much of this extra crap as you can, because what you're going to want on this is you want big flat areas. That way you can add your own personalization. And for me, something that I have been using for a long time when it comes to working on my paint schemes, regardless of color, I will use Sharpie. I will mark on the plastic of the kits. I'll mark on the resins. I'll use it when I'm assembling to make sure I've got a pose in the right spot when I know where I need my pins. I'll use it when I'm just theorizing about, well, how do I want this panel to be? I'll mark on it. And if it's, you know, hey, what would it look like in theory if I had, you know, the lines over on this side? Or what if I had a diamond pattern over on this side? Because at the end of the day, you're going to prime over it and you're never going to see it. And it doesn't affect the paint's ability to stick to anything. So grab yourself a Sharpie, start marking on the plastic kit, and give yourself an idea of, hey, this is what it's going to look like. You can blue tack the armor panels on real quick, and it's going to give you a visual representation of how busy this model is going to be. And with this thing, do not overcomplicate it. Do not make the eye more tired than it already is going to be staring at it. Stick to big, blocky, chunky areas and, you know, stripes, blocks, things like that. Mix and match a little bit if you need to. But I don't really think you're going to be able to make this thing look bad if you paint it decently, like outside of color composition. But I mean, with these guys, it's mostly gray. They put red on the face just above the head. And then there's a tiny bit of red on the toes. And then everything else is just this blue-gray. And then they throw in a splash of white on the face and right above the two arms. If they were trying for the trifecta, you know, the three-point triangle, they could have put the white down on the hips, and then it would have been the head and the two hips, and you have your triangle. They could have put red on the two arms where the white is, and then you've got a second triangle right above the head on the two arms, and that triangle draws your attention to the head. So I feel like there's a lot of potential here, and there's not a lot of work you have to put into it, regardless of the colors you choose. Just do not overcomplicate it. Take some of this stuff away. Take away some of this trim so you don't have to use so much gold. And it, honestly, if you're going to be airbrushing, or even if you're going to be regular brushing, really push your contrast and your highlights. I tell that to everybody. That's kind of my big thing that I harp on, especially with like the small scale stuff. The contrast, the brighter brights and the darker darks, is really going to help sell it, and you won't have to put in nearly as much work. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
It's all good. I just want to swing back to the triangle idea, because I haven't actually heard that a huge amount. So the idea is to get three points of color on a model to surround a central point of interest?
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, they already kind of have that if you look at the two banners or the earrings on either side of that head. But you can do it with color, and it's really... I'm not like a color theorist. I've never had any professional training. It's just stuff I picked up from other people who know more than me and can explain it better. But whenever it comes to a model, whether it's super dynamic posing or super flat basic posing, if you can add 3 points of color of the, you know, identical color or similar color, even if it's just a variation of brightness, it helps train the eye to track to those points. And when you can put them in that triangle configuration, it helps draw the eye to that, because just the way our brains work, we look for patterns.
I will say, though, I do like the weathering they did on the tip of that thing's guns. I do like that slight little bit of weathering on there.
Yeah. Yeah. The subtle stuff is amazing. It, when you overblow it all the time, which is what you see people do a lot, it just doesn't do you any favors.
I mean, there are the... Everything that's on the red panels above the head is incredible. The writing, the really careful weathering they've done along the top, I love it. It's just a shame that just isn't carried out to the rest of the model in a way.
You know, I almost wish they had swapped the blue or the blue-gray of those the eye panels with the red of the panels right there, and just swapped them there, and I think it would have stood out a little bit better in my mind.
Yeah, well, I think now I've been staring at the model for a while. I've realized that where the studio really mess up is that Legio Mortis's other color is supposed to be black, and it's become a very Space Wolf gray that's getting fairly bluish. They knocked it back a bit to make it more of a a black, it would look a lot better as well.
Yeah, I could see that. Get dead center on the model, like between the two thigh armor pieces and that chest piece, there's just a lot of, I mean, it's kind of boring in that section of the model. Had they even put some transfers on that or you know, just something, if one of those hips was hazard striped even, and then they carry that hazard stripe up onto a shoulder or down onto some of the armor plating on the legs, like that would have just made the model more interesting. But there's like a, it's like the top of the model looks really good. The legs and feet look really good. Everything in the middle is kind of boring.
And Mike, I think you hit another nail on the head. Asymmetricality with these models is something else that people don't take enough advantage of. It's very easy to want to make the model symmetrical on both sides. It throwing in that asymmetrical design where this side of like this leg has the stripes, or this left thigh is a different color than the right side. Those are the elements that will make it stand out from the rest of the units. And you don't have to do it on everything, but it is just something that's going to help break up the visual coloration. Because if everything is, you know, I can't remember which Legio it is, but there's one where like all of the example Titans, the carapace plates are all white and then everything else is red or like a tan color. And it looks really cool, but it looks better when you see that. And then, oh, there's like some mixed up stuff down here on the lower legs. It gives them more character.
Something I was just thinking about staring at this thing is, you see that on the loincloth, the red shield hanging from it. You see how it's got that lettering right there?
Yeah.
Honestly, when I get mine, after staring at this thing for probably like a better part of half an hour now, I kind of want to take that effect of the lettering and just go up the loincloth with it.
That would look pretty cool.
And not like the same, like not across the whole plates, right? Like, but like almost like a staggered prayer kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little bit to the left, a little bit right, a little bit like if you were in Word and you're just doing like a little bit of tabbing, just mess around with tab, something like that, just going up and down like a prayer or like a litany of all this thing's glories. I think that'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm going to take this moment because y'all reminded me, this is a public service announcement. Be lore friendly. Add your Titan markings to the lower legs. Per the lore, every Titan has the icon for what type of Titan it is on the leg, because the infantry and the schmucks who've never seen a Titan before because they're from the back 40 will think a Titan is a Titan is a Titan because that thing's big and that's terrifying, and this thing's also big and terrifying. So if you want to like outclass your opponents and show that you're also like super into the lore, just look up those icons. It's super easy. The Warhound is literally a rectangle with four sticks going down.
They should be in every transfer pack.
Yeah. I think I've got on all my Titans the markings on the leg.
My man.
At one stage, that's been really good, because all my Titans also have a serial number on them. And at one stage, they were all on the leg as well, but the last couple, it's moved up to the upper carapace, but...
I don't have that. I'm not going to claim I have that. I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, see, now you've learned, and now you can be cooler than the rest of the kids.
Well, I thought it was pretty cool, though, like a fully painted army, but now I guess I'm just not cool anymore.
That's not the standard anymore, sir. Fully painted is like the basic paint job now, sir.
The one thing I suppose we haven't really discussed is actually the guns themselves. I find the plasma effects to be kind of daunting on this model. There's a lot of it.
There is a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually, their plasma effect is kind of flat also. It's very monotone. I'd like to see some really deep blues and some brighter whites just here and there. That's just not how I picture plasma. I like to see the plasma that, you know, stands out. It's just kind of it's kind of a boring looking plasma. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't make me think a ball of superheated sun energy is coming at me.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you guys, but personally, when I think of like plasma, almost exclusively plasma, and I think about how, if it were real, if it would function when it was, you know, in, you know, when it's, you know, almost in standby, which is what this is, I always imagine it more of like a pulsing, but less of like a, not in the sense that the gun is just, you know, generally pulsing. I think of it, you know, like it's energy circulating through a conduit. So I would imagine,
yeah, like moving back and forth along the coils.
Yeah, either back and forth or like, you know, at the from the back to the front, and then, you know, circulates to the back to the front again. So that's what I personally really love when I see that incorporated into, you know, the effects, and when you can manage that, but in tandem with like the level of intensity of the brightness. Because like if you're going for like this thing's charging up ready to fire, to have it like super bright white, but then have like four or five distinguishable lines of that where it's circulating around so fast, you can still see a little bit of the lulls there, but it's almost completely different versus this one's powered down. There's just like a subtle bright spot and everything else is just kind of that dark blue. Again, me just getting on a high horse about technicality. None of that is more.
No, I agree. Like I want to see a little bit more to it.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the really interesting part to see painted on this model, because it's going to be I've got no idea how I'm even going to attempt to do it, because generally the other plasma weaponry in Titanicus has been the plasma vent sections, if that's what you want to call them, have been fairly subtle on the gun. There's not been a huge amount of space. The gun is mostly the plasma vent section. It's mostly this neon blue, and that's going to be interesting to try and get the color right on it.
I was just thinking, you know, I when I did my Warlord's Sun Fury, right, I did it with the blue plasma that's kind of traditional across all of AT, but now thinking about it and looking at this gun for extended periods of time, I kind of wanted to do a green plasma now. But I don't know how good that would look on this model.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, like, for some of the new painters, because I know that this game brought in a lot of people that don't play a lot of 40K. I've seen a lot of people that just play Titanicus and don't actually play, like, 40K or other miniatures games. There's some really simple things for plasma that give it a really good look. I mean, you could just paint it black, or I like to go gray, and then dry brush white onto all the surfaces, and you could use the contrast paints and hit that, and then just go in with a little bit of bright highlighting here and there. And that is a very serviceable plasma look that, I mean, it pops out on the table, it's bright. You could do the greens. I did an army that had orange plasma throughout the whole army, and just that orange contrast paint over almost a Zenithal dry brush looked really good across the whole army.
If you're going the green plasma, I wonder if that new Necron green paints could be used to critical effect.
I bet it could, because the Warpstone glow looks awesome for plasma. So I can't imagine the Necron one looking bad. It would probably be even brighter.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get anything done. I'll be repainting all my Titans now.
Hey, it happens. It happens. That's how we start new armies, sir.
The other thing about these, to get really successful effects with your plasma, if you're going for that glow, you want to make sure you overbrush your highlights a little bit onto the adjacent components. Like they've basically kept it clean and straight to the plasma. It could just be the images that are around and whatever, but based on what we're seeing, I don't really see any overglow coming onto the brass or coming onto the steel plating in the middle of the, you know, the coils. So that's another way that you can help sell those effects, by just dry brushing your white or your dark color a little bit more onto it, or even just coming in and, you know, spot edging it in and just reemphasizing that, hey, this is a glow effect and it's affecting the adjacent areas that it would be reflecting on.
Yeah, that's a really good point, David. That might be why I'm not afraid of the plasma on this gun, because it doesn't look like it's even powered on. There's no glow.
Well, I've just spotted the problem, and it's going to be a nightmare to paint properly without, you know, going in with an LED. The armor plates overlap the plasma coiling, so you're going to get natural light shadow on the plasma coiling, and there's nothing you can do to stop that without literally putting an LED in or something.
It's only on the outside, though. Look at the left arm versus the right arm. The outside actually covers up the plasma, but the right side, or the inside, doesn't. Or, I mean, if it does, it's not as much. I'm only seeing, like, maybe one or two coils behind it on that side.
But that one panel there is a pain.
Yeah, it's almost like halfway covered, it looks like, which it makes sense. You'd want to try and give this thing some armor so you don't just get a breach in the mid-fight.
But as annoying as that'll be, that right there is also prime real estate for selling that glow effect, because
yeah,
getting that glow onto the trim and from the coil that is covered You've got the leading edge, the top edge, the under edge, and that curve that comes back around. And that, if you can go in there, you don't even have to do a great job at it. Just give the impression that the glow is there and it's recognized, and you're already miles ahead.
The only place I wouldn't know if I would do it on this particular model would be the hips, like the hip panels themselves. Just because if you were to magnetize that and then you have just a glow effect on the hips, it might look weird with a different gun.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably wouldn't spread it across to that.
I never really do like on the body, like exactly what you said. If it's a magnetized weapon, I keep the effects to the weapon itself because it doesn't make sense to put it on the rest of the body.
Yeah, it's just a random light effect at that point.
Yeah, I suspect you're going to need to decouple the arms about what that shield plate is there in the main body.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this kit, it looks like right underneath that missile, that's probably going to be a prime spot for a magnet. Like, there's that whole arm section will be able to come on and off.
Yeah.
Because I bet that if you build them proper, the arms will be able to swivel. So, I mean, that's perfect spot for a magnet anyway, if you have a swivel joint.
Yep. I mean, if it's like the Warlord, they'll...
God bless you, Warlord kit. God bless you.
God bless you. But I magnetized the Porphyrians for my customer, too. So I have no clue why I did it. I was just like, I want these arms to swivel. I'm going to put magnets in it.
As the guy who drilled 18 knights and put in 1mm magnets in those arms,
yeah,
I have no room to judge.
Yeah, I didn't magnetize his knights. He got them glued together.
You magnetized knights, Christorus. Okay.
Well, okay, I was asked to, and I didn't really have a reason not to. I looked at him like, yeah, I can do this. And then I got the actual bit in my hand. I'm like, what have I done?
I mean, that's the whole thing with us commissioned painter guys. You know, time is money, so we're willing to do whatever you want as long as you're willing to pay us to do it, you know?
Yeah. I think I drilled like 78 holes minimum.
That's insane.
And it was just 1mm magnet after another. Like, did I get this polarity right? Yeah. Okay, keep going.
Well, at least you know they were strong enough to hold.
I mean, if a stiff breeze hits them.
Oh, gosh, I'd be so scared of slipping when you're drilling those holes.
Did you look at Kyle's knights at Halo?
No, I didn't.
Every single one of them.
Oh, my.
Except the Lancers and the Acastus, because they hadn't announced those other kits yet, so we weren't sure how they were going to match up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Acastus is one of those kits where I think you're just going to buy a box and make it a Porphyrion and a box and make it the other one.
Yeah. We're still waiting on the other one at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah, I can't remember the name for it off the top of my head, so internet be kind to me.
Asterius.
Thank you. Yeah, it was just fun.
Okay. I think we touched on most things about the actual Warmaster, so let's sort of just open up for a bit of a free-for-all. Is there arms like techniques and stuff and ideas that we haven't really touched on? I'm sure we've got some other concepts rolling around.
I was going to say, I kind of touched on the main thing I wanted to. My secret sauce that I wanted to bring to the table was using Sharpies, because again, it's not something I see other people do. I mean, even if like for nothing else, like you're trying to decide where to apply battle damage, you can come in with a Sharpie and like gently mark up where you want to apply battle damage. Not gently, sorry. I was thinking you can also, after you've painted a model, if you come in with, if you've sealed it, you can come in with a pencil and you can gently mark up with, you know, soft pencil lead where you think you want your damage to be. And if you change your mind, you can erase it if you're, again, gentle with it.
Yeah, I was just going to mention the asymmetrical thing again. I mean, that's it really does draw a lot more interest to a model when it...
I would say always make sure to add fun, interesting narrative bits like lines of text. Some legions have like flame patterns. Some have a lot of hazard striping that they like to do. Don't be afraid to try those things. Like, you can really build up the model's backstory and the weight of this being like a really impressive engine of war that's seen like 1,000 battles and is ready for another 1,000 if it has that character of a model to it, in my opinion.
Any other painting wisdoms we want to depart?
I get small brushes. The trim on the Titanicus Knights is insane.
Another shortcut cheat. If you pick up I'm sure you've probably seen this. I think it was popularized by Spiky Bits. But if you pick up metallic Sharpies, you can use those for doing your trim. My personal opinion on it is that if you do that and you just call it good, it looks like hot garbage. But if you do that and you use it as a base layer, it is a very quick and effective way to block in your base colors, apply some washes over those, and then come in, do your extra steps, you know, your highlights and things like that. You can make it look really good, or at least, you know, pretty good. And again, it's all about, you know, working smarter, not harder. Just kind of, again, your mileage may vary. It's another tool. It's another technique. It's something to consider. I know there's a lot of people out there that have like the jittery hands. They can do certain stuff, but when it gets to the like the fine details, the handshakes just make it near impossible to make anything accomplished. So that's one thing I would also throw out.
Yeah, I think when it comes to trim, the single simplest way to solve to paint the trim on Titanic is just to spray your plates the color you want the trim. And then you fill in the central plates. Because even if you can't get into the very corners, as Andy brought up earlier, washes go and fill those corners up pretty heavily anyway. So a black wash over will help that transition really nicely. So and it's much easier to fill in the gap than it is to paint the raised trim. It's harder to make accidents.
Yep. I would also, I'm that guy, I always recommend everybody buy an airbrush.
Yeah.
If you're going to be in the hobby for the long term, just go ahead and buy it. It's no different than buying a screwdriver. You're going to have it. You're going to use it, and you're going to love it.
Yeah, and I'll second that because David taught me how to airbrush. So,
as the guy who sucks with an airbrush, I own an airbrush, but it and I are in like a long distance relationship right now.
You know what, Andy? I'll have you come over to my place and we'll hang out this afternoon. But I'll skip up. I'll teach you everything David taught me.
Yes. Paint some dreadnoughts.
I'll bring the beer.
That's all I charge.
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't got an airbrush yet. I need to. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the same offer goes to you, Martin. Anytime you want to come out to Yukon, you can just hang out the studio. Even if you just want to try an airbrush, you can use mine.
Yeah. It's been something I've been meaning to do for like the last 5 years, but I just haven't pulled the trigger on it yet.
So here's some pro tip tactica for anybody who does not have an airbrush. Harbor Freight, go buy one of their compressors. It comes with the moisture trap and the gauge on it for like 70 bucks. And I've been using the exact same one. It may even be cheaper than that. I've been using the exact same one for 7+ years. Thing works like a dream. There's no issues with it. It doesn't have a very big tank, so it's going to kick on every, you know, couple seconds after you start spraying with it. So, but it's not very loud because it's a tiny, tiny little bitty compressor. And then if you guys are wanting to get airbrushes, I started off using Badger. I've been using them for a long time. I recommend them. They've started doing a thing where every year on their birthday, their brushes become ridiculously cheap. So if you can time it right, you can get some of their ridiculously cheap brushes. Your mileage may vary as far as that goes. I haven't purchased a brush from them in probably 3 or 4 years, and they've been doing that for probably 5 or 6. And I've heard some things from a few folks who have been buying them religiously every year when they come on sale. That, you know, obviously when you crank your production and your, you know, sales from X amount to like 2 to 3,000% of what you normally do into like a weekend, it, you know, certain things have to give. So just, you know, be aware you're getting a good quality brush, but it may not be the same quality that it was 7 to 8, 6, 7 years ago. Not saying that's a bad thing at all. It's just, it's the nature of production. The same thing they experienced with Tesla when they started making their cars. The ones that they originally made were perfect. Then they started ramping up production. Gaps and things started getting a lot bigger than they were. And now the production has started to stabilize. The minor issues are a lot smaller than they were. So yeah, for less than $150, you can get a really good setup and have everything you need to be airbrushing.
Including the paints, or do you use just normal paints? That's always been my...
I use Citadel paints straight out of the... I switch the pots into dropper bottles, mm-hmm. A little bit of thinner, a little bit of distilled water, and I paint with them. That's it.
Oh, Lord, we can go all day on this one. I'll use any paint under the sun, Minotaur, GW, AK Interactive, P3, Vallejo. Hell, some of my favorites are go to Hobby Lobby, get the Liquitex Basics, throw that stuff into a big plastic container with the proper amount of water and dilute it down to where it'll go through the airbrush. I can paint terrain and models for days with that.
I still have the 3-ounce tube of burnt umber David told me to buy from, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? And I still use it to this day. I mean, it lasts forever.
I need to, if only for terrain, because I paint a lot of terrain. And
oh, dude, airbrush on terrain is stupid. You can paint an entire table in a day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about, at the moment, I'm all about my rattle cans and then
mm-hmm.
Same.
Coast of paint and...
Having painted an entire table's worth of AT terrain with a brush, I wish I had done it with an airbrush. I will say that. I achieved a similar effect, but I wish I had done it with an airbrush so I didn't hate myself by the time I was done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a table of AT terrain sitting downstairs that I'm halfway through constructing and painting. It's going to be I'm in the process of building a pile of hills because I'm going to have a wooded hill table for the next Halo, hopefully. Fingers crossed. So I've made a pile of hills out of that spray can wall filler stuff, and I've been shaping it out with just a hobby knife, and I'm now building texture on it with wall plaster. And then I've got like 160 Z scale trees coming in from a railway place, and I'm going to put those over it after I've finished texturing and spraying it. Yeah, small little wooden trees. They'll look real nice. Be a nice break from the usual cities that get destroyed by Titans.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people don't think of that. A lot of the things that they use for the railroad hobby can be used for Warhammer. All the flock, basing, terrain, all that kind of stuff. Even the molds, they're plaster molds with like rock formations and stuff. You just have to find the right scale because there's, you know, a million different scales of railroad trains. I don't know.
Yeah. Z for Titanicus, you want Z scale. That's the 8mm. I'm not sure what Warhammer is at the moment because it keeps on changing its scale. Well, before I start passing out with the chronocoma, do we have anything else we want to add painting-wise? Or
I think we covered it pretty good on what would make the model look better and a bunch of different techniques and stuff you can use. I think that should help people.
I only have one soapbox, if I can take a moment. I go to events sometimes like everybody else does, right? Or did pre-COVID. And a lot of the things I hear from like people at the events and people even at my local shops when I come down and like wear a mask and bundle up and go get paint is they're always like, oh man, you paint so good. How do you do this stuff? The trick is like, don't be afraid to try things, guys. Always be learning. Always try and help each other out. When I got into the hobby, I had not one, but two people just constantly feeding me painting advice. Like, talk to your local friends, talk to the people on your Facebook groups, get crazy with stuff, try new things out. You'll figure out what works and what doesn't work faster than you will figure out what you're good at.
That's 100% true. Always talk to people and tell your friends, stop telling you it looks good when telling them give you honest critiques. Because that's one of the battles is everybody's like, oh man, that looks so great. And then, you know, they'll tell somebody else, it's like, yeah, that was okay. I just don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. No, don't be afraid to hurt your buddy's feelings. Give him honest feedback because somebody later down the road that's judging them at a paint contest, they don't ever have to talk to your buddy. They just have to write up a score and they don't care if it hurts somebody's feelings.
100%. Like that's kind of one of the last things I wanted to touch on as well. The biggest hill that I had to climb when I got into this hobby was I looked at what everybody was doing online and I would get simultaneously so motivated and so discouraged because I would see something and I'd want to try it and I'd go at it and I'd give it my all. And then about midway through or, you know, 3/4 of the way through, you hit that hump. You're almost at the top or you're getting close to the top and you get discouraged. And you look at the example you were looking at and you realize yours looks nothing like it. There's this disconnect that you have to accept. There's nothing wrong with looking at that stuff online, but don't hold yourself to those standards. This hobby is not about trying to be perfect. It's not about trying to be best or make, you know, if that's what you're gauging your enjoyment of the hobby by, you're not going to be enjoying yourself. You got to find the thing that makes you happy, and that's what you got to hold on to. For me, I love nights. I love hosting events, and I love the people that I get to be around. That's why I like to join in and do the hobby hangouts like almost every night of the week. I love doing the events because I get to see my friends. I've never even played in any of the events that I've hosted because I'd rather just BS with people and make sure everybody else is having a good time. And I love just sitting down and building and playing and painting. And sometimes I get things done. Other times I don't. But, you know, don't hold yourself to that unfair standard. Don't look at what somebody else does and just be like, well, now I don't want to do it anymore because there's no way I'm going to get there. We all have to start somewhere, and you just have to figure out what your process is. And nobody has the same process.
I'm glad y'all backed me up on my soapbox, though. That was actually really cool. I'm not going to lie.
Well, it's the only soapbox that matters. Like, support one another. Like what Mike said, don't just tell somebody, yeah, that looks really cool. Like if they ask for feedback, don't just tell them that it looks great. Be specific. Like, hey, I really like the colors on this. That's more specific than this looks cool. That lets them know that, hey, at least their color choice is correct. Or if you don't like something, you know, maybe don't just come in and say like, that looks like trash. Don't say, you know, that, you know, that's a terrible color combination. Maybe actually come in and be, there's a proactive way and there's a detracting way. Proactive is trying to help the person, trying to push the conversation forward. The detractive way, the destructive way, is trying to tear that person down for no reason other than your self-satisfaction. And we have all dealt with that in school, and we've all dealt with that at work. We've all dealt with that coworker or that boss who's come in and been a shithead to you when they didn't have to be. And how does that make you feel for the rest of the day? It really pisses you off. We don't need that in the hobby. We're supposed to be in this to have a good time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the entire point why I wanted to sit down and talk today, because it's in paint, just getting going out there, trying new things, getting models painted, and not being scared of trying new techniques and actually being critical of your previous works are all things that everyone needs to just take a important hope to do. I'm sort of rambling. What you guys said. So I think we'll call it an evening. Thank you guys so much for hanging out the last hour and a half. It's been really nice to talk to folk again for a bit.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, it's been great.
So I just want to once again thank Dave, Mike, and Andy for joining me to record that great episode. I also want to once again thank Robert Henderson for the insights that he was able to provide, and I'm sorry that he wasn't able to make the show. I really enjoyed that recording. I enjoyed listening to it again. I enjoyed recording it with him in the first place. There was a lot we talked about that was left on the cutting room floor, and I hope in the future several of those topics could be returned. We had a great conversation about 3D printing that mirrored the conversation I had with Rudolph a lot, so I decided to leave most of that out. But it is something I will return to and definitely involve some of what was said there. I also plan on getting these guys back on the show before too long. I have a spark of an idea of another conversation I want to run past a roundtable of guys, and we've already started penciling in a plan to do something in the fall. But until that point, I hope this week has inspired you, and when you get your hands on the Warmaster Titan that will inevitably be released by Games Workshop, you're able to elevate that paint job to that next level. I know I cannot wait to get my hands on the model. As I said, it's just a matter of time before Games Workshop release it, and when they do, it is going to be fantastic. This episode has driven my hype about it immensely, and I hope it's done the same to you. But until then, you can join me in 2 weeks for the next episode of the God Engine Cast. Thank you again for listening to another episode of the God Engine Cast, a podcast dedicated to discussing the Adeptus Titanicus game produced by Games Workshop. This show was written, recorded, and edited by Martin Emery. This podcast is completely unofficial and no way endorsed by Games Workshop Limited. No challenge to any trademarks or copyrights have been intended. All rights are reserved by the respective owners. If you have any questions of the show, please email me at god.engine.cast@gmail.com or reach out to me through Twitter or Facebook. So until next time, I wish you all good fortune.